हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Page 43. Hanuman. Hanuman is composed of five parts. Pratigya, proposition, hetu, reason, udaharana, involving. Okay, involving vyapti, or the example. Upanayana, application, and nigama, conclusion. But it does not produce certain knowledge. There may be visama vyapti, non-equipollent concomitants, or unequal extension. For example, there may be smoke rising profusely from a mountain for a long time, though the fire has been extinguished by rain. Footnote 18. Smoke and fire have a different range of conditions for being present. Okay. Still, one may conclude there is fire on the mountain, or in the rainy season, the mountain may have lots of mist that looks like smoke. Shabda is not subject to these logical faults. For example, it is said, fire arises from contact with a sunstone. Footnote 19. Sandstone. Sandstone or sunstone?
Sandstone. Why is it translated
here as sunstone? Here it says up here, sun, as in rubbing, right? But down here it says sandstone.
Yes, so Maharaj translated as sandstone. Then when I got to some of the place, they said sandstone.
Sand.
Sand.
But that's probably because they don't understand. They just thought it should start with an S or something. Okay. So, a special stone called Suryakanta stone, which produces fire when in contact with the rays of the sun. Riti. The Nyaya school of philosophy deals elaborately with the topic of Hanuman. Logical inferences of two kinds, for oneself, Svartha, and for others, Parartha. The school recommends that, after arriving at an inferred conclusion for oneself, one use a five-step form of procedure to persuade others by logical argument and enable them to infer the same conclusion. In other words, Nyaya employs a syllogism, a systematic and comprehensive chain of arguments, consisting of five premises, avyayas. This is in contrast to the three-step syllogistic formula commonly used in Western philosophy. We will analyze both. In Western logic, an argument is supported by a major and minor premise. The major premise contains the major terms, that is the predicate of the conclusion, and the minor premise contains the minor term, that is the subject of the conclusion. What does predicate mean here?
Subject and predicate.
Okay. Common to both premises is the middle term, that is, excluded from the conclusion. The typical example is the attempt to deduce the presence of fire based on the perception of smoke. One, major premise, logic. Wherever there is smoke, there is fire. Minor premise, data, there is smoke on this mountain. Conclusion, therefore this mountain is on fire. Basis of argument. Oh, okay. Okay, so there's the logic, okay. In the terminology of Nyaya, this inference will be divided into its component parts as follows. The mountain is the minor term, Paksha, because the mountain is the subject under consideration. Fire is the major term, Sadhya, because that is what we want to prove in relation to the mountain. The presence of smoke on the hill is the middle term, Hetu or Linga, because it is the sign that indicates the presence of fire. The essential element of this inference is the knowledge of smoke on the hill, Hetu, or the grounds for inference. Next arises the awareness of the universal relationship between smoke and fire based on past observations. This rule is known as Vyapti. From the experience of seeing smoke together with fire in many places, including kitchens, one establishes a general principle thinking the Hetu and Sadhya. As a result of this knowledge of the existence of the unperceived fire on the mountain arises. When used as a formal statement or verbal expression designed to convince others, however, the structure of inference is changed. Here, according to Nyaya, is the equivalent syllogism according to Pararta Anumana, reasoning for another's understanding. 1. Pratigya, there is fire here. 2. Hetu, because there is smoke. Udaharana, wherever there is smoke, there is fire, like in the kitchen and unlike in the middle of a lake. Upanayana, smoke is rising from this particular mountain. Nigamana, therefore this mountain is on fire. First one states that one intends what one intends to prove. One predicates the major term, Sadhya, in relation to the minor term, Paksha. Second one gives the evidence for the thesis. One relates the middle term, Linga, to the minor term. Third one states the reason as a general principle, Vyapti, with at least one real example, positive or negative, preferably both. One establishes the universal invariable relation between the middle term and the major term, right? Because you've already connected the middle term to the minor term, right? So here we've connected the smoke with the mountain, so we have to connect smoke with fire. And then having connected smoke with fire, therefore then the fire and the mountain are connected. Does that make sense? If A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. You understand? That's what you're doing.
Now, in the Western approach, these three things.
Yes, means that they mean. Yeah, because they're only coming to the conclusion afterwards. It's because you say where there's smoke, there's fire, but what are you going to do with this? There is smoke on this mountain. Okay, now you get an idea maybe where they're going, but then only to say. So the Vedic, you start off with the fire. There's fire on the mountain, right? Why? Because there's smoke.
Yes.
Right? So you see the logical unfolding. The other one you don't so much. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're unclear where they're going with it. You say, wherever there is smoke, there is fire.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So, you know, there is smoke on this mountain.
Yes.
Okay. Then, so therefore this mountain is on fire. Okay. Now you understand. But here you're saying there's fire here. Why would you say there's fire? Because there's smoke. Okay, and so yes, fire and smoke go together like that. And then you show that because now the fire and the smoke go together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now the point is now you're applying that. The smoke is rising from this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So therefore, because where the smoke and fire are connected and there's smoke on this mountain, therefore, then there's fire there. Does that make sense?
It's logic.
Yes.
The other one is like uncertainty.
It's an uncertainty, but what is the school that uses this uncertainty, right? It's speculation. They don't really want conclusions. They only want close enough to a conclusion that it gives something to think about, to change a direction, to give something new. To you know, that's the whole point of it. It's just enough to think about.
Yes. Yes.
While the Vedic is you're trying to come to a conclusion.
Yes.
So what you'll see is that they will be much more specific.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And so then also, because this is considered the main form.
Mm-hmm.
right? But there's in dealing with, and then in dealing with this, how to establish that each one is proper. Because here we're saying, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yes.
Right? So the thing is, but this is uneven.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because only where there's fire, it means where there's smoke, there's fire. But you can have fire without smoke.
Yes.
So it's uneven. But in here it'll work.
Yes.
But sometimes you see people will use this connection here. But being uneven, it doesn't apply to the example they're using.
Yes.
It applies if it's the opposite.
Yes.
But because of just how people put things together, you don't worry about it. So they've used rhetoric, but it hasn't really been logical.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
You know, they've just been very good at an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're very bad at an argument. You know, whatever, it depends upon whether they win or not. Right? Yeah, so the idea is that you're trying to bring it to a conclusion, because with the conclusion, then you can use it. Right?
Can you say that the Western approach is it's speculation, and also there is no the intent is not connected with any spiritual consciousness.
No, because the thing is, if you want to speculate, means you never actually want to know the absolute truth, because the problem with the absolute truth is the word absolute. They like truths, meaning facts, whether they're actually perceived facts or they're perceived by the mind, you know? So if it's just fact, then they'll go on that, but they don't know still how it got there. Like that. You know, there's a big boulder right in the middle of the street. You know, so they can speculate about that, how it came, and, you know, on the fifth floor, the old lady up there was, cleaning out her house, and she had this rock sitting around that she didn't want to keep anymore, so she tossed it out the balcony. But it had to be the fifth floor, because if only that would have been high enough for the rock to make that much of a dent like this. Does that make sense? Like that. But then some will say, no, but the trajectory shows that it's not coming exactly from that angle and all that, so then this old lady can't be the one that threw it out and everything like that. It's coming from the other one, so it's actually coming from that direction, but the only building down there is, you know, very far down there, so how would they get it there unless they catapulted it over there, you know, like that. And then someone else comes along and says, no, but they were doing street work here, you know, and that, so they had actually dug a hole for doing working with, you know, the different plumbing and all those things like that. And some kids were rolling this down the street but not seeing the hole, then it fell into the hole, and so therefore then it's like this, then it's like, you know, but it's too big for a bunch of kids to be rolling along, so okay, then maybe it was the NFL, they were rolling it down the street here, you know, they're big enough and strong enough. And you know, they can just go on and on and on like this. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. But that it's just some fun to talk about, you know, and things like that. And then, you know, they might come to a conclusion that, you know, that there will be a regular check by the municipality every 6 months on old ladies living in the fifth floor or higher, that they're not throwing any boulders outside their balcony. So if there's no balcony, you don't have to worry about it. But if there's a balcony, then, you know, like that. So you have to flag all old ladies on the fifth floor with balconies. Yeah? You know, so who knows what their point is. But they just go on and on and on. It's because it leaves it enough where you can go with it now and everyone's satisfied, but then after some time, someone can bring it up again and it's a new discussion. Well, if you have a conclusion, where's the new discussion? Then it's just a practical, do you accept it or not? How do you apply it? And if you don't accept it, then what is your conclusion? You know what I'm saying? So then you have to stick to that. So then it becomes a problem. Does that make sense? And at the same time, as we would understand that they're all contained in there. Means that where there's smoke, there's fire. Means that's the problem. They're starting here with the example.
Yes.
So they're starting already with the mental part. You know, with the mind. Then going to the data.
Right. So now this Western system has already been used in this period?
That I know of means that Greeks, they were very big on it.
Yes.
And in the medieval university, then logic, rhetoric, and grammar were always the first thing to learn.
Yes.
You know, means that was the first part of your studies. And so then, when you were proficient in that, then you went on to the second part, right? So it was always considered part of the, you know, intellectual circles that you would know how to identify, you know, proper discussions and be able to take part in a proper discussion like that. Because if you don't have it, then people just say anything. And as soon as you mention something that someone else doesn't like, then if they're liberals, then they can get offended. And just by them being offended, then according to etiquette, you're supposed to stop the argument. Otherwise, you're just becoming more and more offensive. The idea of coming to a conclusion and all that is not important. You know what I'm saying? But if you're talking about speculators who like to argue and all that, then they won't necessarily use the emotional. But at the same time, as it doesn't mean that they'll use the standard thing of this. Those other aspects of rhetoric, I mean, the logic you can use, all different techniques of rhetoric, where you change the meaning of something. Somebody's used one word, but it also has another context, that word. Let's say a word that before was a perfectly normal word, that nowadays people use it as a buzzword for some political position, you know, some social position. So now you may be talking about something else, you know, and that. And so just like you say, yes, you know, it was very dark out, it was very dark and it was quite cool and all that. And then the other person says, oh, so only those who are only African Americans are cool, right? The white guys aren't cool. You know, what about the Chinese? What about, you know, everyone else? Why is it only the black guys are cool? You know, you weren't talking about blacks or the weather. You know, or I mean, you were talking about the weather. You weren't talking about an attitude. But they just, by chala, they just move it into a different thing. You understand? So if you're amongst friends, that's fun thing to you. But if it's an argument, then it's bogus. Means you can win an argument that way, but for actually understanding the truth, then it's useless. You have Stonewall, where you just won't talk about it, or Jalpa, where you just won't talk. I mean, Jalpa means you'll just say anything. Just talk. Because you're talking, they can't talk. You know, it doesn't have to be connected. So there's ways that you can just defeat the person argument. So Gotama has shown all these, but the whole point is actually, are you supposed to use of these five? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the thing is if the other person, that's an actual proper discussion. And these other things are, you can use them, but his whole system is to show that from this, then establish what's real and all that, you know, what's the ontology, epistemology, all these things. Mm-hmm. Then establishing that, then you use this five, you know, aspects of syllogism. Then it works. And then he also gives those other ones that, you know, aren't really recommended. Right? Not for if you're trying to establish, you know, the truth. If you're just trying to make someone quiet, then you could use that. But that's why Krishna in the Gita says, of all this logic, he is, of the 16 padarthas, he is Siddhanta. Because you're coming to a conclusion like that. That's actually Krishna. These other things, just arguing and being logical, those parts aren't where you find Krishna. It means it's all him, otherwise it wouldn't work. But it takes on its natural glory if it comes to conclusion. Right? Is that okay?
So now it's just another perspective in life. How to apply the system in our daily life.
Yes, yes. It just means that you want to, based on Shabda, you're trying to find how what you're doing connects to the Lord.
There's no Shabda
that makes it, otherwise what would you base it on? You can see patterns, you know, if you're intelligent you see patterns, but what are those patterns for? What do they mean? How are they useful?
Yes.
Is that something that makes sense? You know, it's just like, let's say Tan Sen is sitting there at the Jamuna, and then in the evening, right? And you know, must have been, you know, and the waves of the Jamuna are coming in. So they come in as waves, but they go back down.
Yes.
Right? The water comes in as high and goes back down. And then that time of the day is the evening. So I can't remember what the rag is. Iman, I think. Iman or Kalyan? No Kalyan? I don't remember. Whatever. It's the evening raga there, right at the twilight. So different about it, it has, is that the fourth note is sharp. It's raised. Because in the Vedic system, notes don't have a sharp. They just have flat. They can be lowered, but they're not raised. Only the fourth note is raised. So it doesn't have a lower. It only has its raised. And so it's used at that time in the evening. Then the waves are coming in and going out. So then coming in high, going out low. So then he came up with the rag, I think it's Jamun Kalyan or something like that, where when you're going up in the scale, you know, in the melody, it'll be sharp. But when you come down, it'll be natural. So it's some special thing that's attributed to him. So by seeing the waves, that's what he got out of it. Right? Now you have some Polynesians, you know, how you say, sitting there in Hawaii with these really, really big, big, steady, stable waves. And then they somehow or another work out surfing. Right? You know, someone else sees these waves and then they work out some system where, you know, the wave comes in and they have these generators and the wave hits and it moves the generator and they produce electricity. Right? You know, someone else, it'll just be a nice time to sit down at the beach and things like that and the wave. You know, so people will come, what do you use it for? It's the same fact. But what do you use it for? So we say it's facts or everything. No, it's truth is the real thing. But Shabda means, what should it be used for? I mean, you have a fact, but what do you do with this fact? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a fact. You have, let's say, a loaf of bread. Okay, now what do you do with it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is you could, so many things you could do with it. You could eat it, you could let it sit around till you get penicillin, you know, you could feed it to the goats. You know, you could wait until it gets a little bit crunchy and then throw it out the window at somebody and hit him in the head. I mean, there's so many things you could do with it. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. How do you decide what is to be done? What's the proper thing to do? You know, let's say today's Ekadasi. Now what do you do with it? Today's not Ekadasi. Tomorrow. Just for those listening. They'll be sitting there going, Ekadasi! Yes. Tomorrow.
In India.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like that, then, what's the authority? How do you define? So that's why Shabda is the basis. Then from that, then you apply the Anumana Pratyaksha, and then it works. But if you don't have Shabda, you don't know what to do with facts. So if we take what we've heard from others, means, you know, the public, and just, you know, public friends list and that, but it's just because it's a general opinion and how they see it, then you take so many, you know, social positions or political positions. But what's the authority for? The only authority is because they think it. And they're just like, we want to fit in. That's that second level of consciousness, the second level of gaining knowledge, that we only accept what you know, vox populi. That's it. But it's not about Shabda. It's not about actual authority. No, just if enough people say it, then it becomes authority. Just like a person's there, and they're good at something, and nobody cares. But then somebody notices that can somehow or another expose them, you know, through the media to a major amount of people. Now so many people like it, now they're of value. Now they're important. But they're not any different in what they know than they were before. So it's just the public says that they're of value. Or when the flavor changes, then the public now doesn't care, even though they're still just as good. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of thing, it's you know, great for social, keep you socially busy and active. You know, something to talk about. But as far as actually understanding the absolute truth, it's not very useful. Right? Does that make sense? So that one we don't even bother with. The earliest we start is the Shabda. But now you have the Shabda, what's it for? You could use it for karma, you could use it for jnana, or you could use it for bhakti. So, by authority, we'll use it for bhakti. Because that's what the Bhagavatam says. But others, then they'll take Shabda and use it for the purpose of karma jnana. Like that. That's why Shabda is the most important. Okay, one establishes the universal invariable relation between the middle term and the major term. Fourth, one applies the reason to the specific situation at hand. Last, one draws the conclusion. Obviously, this argument has a problem as it stands. It does not follow that because there is smoke, there is necessarily fire. There may be smoke or merely the semblance of smoke for any number of reasons. The observer may mistake clouds over the mountain for smoke, or see the smoke just after rains have extinguished the fire. Or perhaps a movie is being filmed on a mountain featuring smoky special effects. The deduction that a fire is burning on the mountain is wrong due to non-committance. The presence of smoke does not guarantee fire, and vice versa. The presence of fire does not necessarily guarantee smoke. If there's any error in perceiving the linga, dudu karana pattava, for example, or any deviation in the universal generalization, the inference will be faulty and its conclusion unreliable. Right? So that's why we don't take it as authority. When someone says, that's not logical, point is it based on shastra? If it is, we don't understand the logic, that's our fault. If it's our own speculation and they say it's not logical, then there may be something to discuss. Or if it's based on shastra but we're applying it wrongly, then, you know, then that's there. So logic has its limitations. That's why it's not taken as an authority. It's useful, but it's only useful in connection with shabda. Like pratyaksha, therefore, anumana is not a foolproof means of acquiring knowledge. Thus, amending the argument as follows resolves the fallacy. Major premise, wherever there is smoke, there may be fire. Minor premise, there is smoke on the mountain. Conclusion, perhaps this mountain is on fire. That would be more proper, but still it doesn't establish anything. It's just now it's, you know, closer. As the above shows, even if one may not affirm that consequent with the certainty, one may affirm it as a possibility. And this is precisely what logic does. It provides a reason for considering that a hypothesis might be true. Indeed, it gives a reason for believing a hypothesis, even if one cannot affirm the hypothesis or conclusion with certainty. Logic does not guarantee truth. It speaks only in terms of probability. But so, since probable is enough, you know, then it's worth, yeah. Hence, absolute certainty from logic is possible only in abstract realms like geometry, not in real life. It is always possible for a premise to turn out wrong. The validity or invalidity of an inference depends on the validity or invalidity of vyapti, the extent to which the major term, fire, and the middle term, smoke, pervade each other. The extent to which one entity may be inferred from the other is referred in logic to as concomitant. So concomitants and vyapti are the same?
Vyapti is whether you can, both can assemble each other. It can go backward and forward.
Oh, only if it goes back and forward is vyapti.
Vyapti means that.
But I thought you had even and uneven.
Yeah. Vyapti, samavyapti is even. And
if it's not even? Oh, it has a different name.
Different
name. Oh, so vyapti is not the general name.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Now, what is vyapti?
Vyapti? What is vyapti?
Yeah, it's quick. How we assemble one from the other? Like if you say, like when we are inferring something to other, before that we see that it should be valid. Like there is some reason for which there should be an inference. That reasoning is vyapti. And the inference itself is concomitant. Exactly how... Like when we are inferring that there is fire, there is a smoke. Then no, but there should be some relation between smoke and fire. That is vyapti. And then some of vyapti means whether it can go... The first inference and the opposite inference, both will be valid in that relationship, and there is samavyapti. It comes again, Maharaj, in the 11th one.
Okay. Invariable concomitance guarantees the validity of the conclusion. By invariable means it goes both ways. While the absence of it undermines its validity. Correct anuman is rooted firmly in shabda. O cold traveler, do not believe that there is fire because of smoke. We have seen that the fire has been extinguished by rain. Shabda. But I see fire on the mountain which gives off smoke. Quote, that is only an image in the smoke, but over there one can obtain fire. A cold traveler. That's why he's worried about where there's fire. Purvapaksha. The cause of lack of truth is because some false anuman. True anuman does not err since there is generic form of making inference. For instance, one can understand what happened to be smoke was only vapor from a poisonous mountain because a person developed pain in his eyes. From this it would be concluded that there was no smoke and thus no fire. You know, so it's just they're trying to say is no, but through logic you could establish. But the problem is sometimes it works, sometimes it won't work. So you can't say that the method is good. Yeah. That's the point. It's just probability. So, but they'll say, but in this case it works. Yeah, but what about in other cases? Is that, yeah. Uttara. Smoke does not arise at all times from fire. It is possible that vapors arose from smoke, which long ago disappeared. One attains correct knowledge of fire only from perceiving real fire which produces real smoke, or perceiving no fire which produces fake smoke. To prove real smoke, we must perceive real fire. By mixing of sadhya, major term, and sadhana, premise, to gain knowledge of smoke, there is mutual dependence of the terms. To prove fire, we must prove smoke. To prove smoke, we must confirm fire. This is a fault, because you have to be able to prove it both ways. Okay? Then it's a problem. Siddhanta. Since there is uncertainty in pratyaksha regarding its truth, anuman is unreliable, even in the case of equal extension, samavyapti. Right? So even if you do have this equal extension, the samavyapti, that with the smoke there's fire and fire there's smoke, but the point is you have to gain that per perception, and we've already proved that perception is faulty. Right? So even you're saying the anuman can work, the difficulty is it has to be based on sense perception. Mm-hmm. And that's already been established as faulty.
Yes.
Here are examples of shabda overriding anuman. Sorry? Oh, yes. On the other hand, shabda is independent, as in, you are the tenth person. End quote. According to an individual's competence, anuman assists shabda, according to their competence. For example, one may infer that a diamond can be cut by iron because it is made of earth, if one has not seen the particular quality of the diamond. But if one hears about the qualities of diamond, shabda, one would not make such a mistaken inference. Does that make sense? Means the diamond is from the earth, and so then you take iron, which you use to cut so many other things, from the earth, and therefore the iron can cut the diamond. Right? So the problem comes is you don't actually know about the quality of diamonds. If you understood the quality of the diamond, you wouldn't say that. Because the diamond cannot be cut by iron. Right? So it's only if you hear about it from shabda. Right? Here are examples of shabda overriding anuman. A limb burned by fire can be relieved by the heat of fire. Dried ginger becomes sweet when cooked by the fire of digestion.
Generally, we think that if you are burned by fire, how can heat resolve it? According to logic, it is not correct.
Yes. Yes. Dried ginger becomes sweet when cooked by the fire of digestion. Yeah. Yeah. So when it's that, then it changes the nature.
Yes.
Right? So that's what we were saying the other day. We would only know this from Shastra. Otherwise, it's not something that modern science even knows is there. So therefore, they're not. They don't perceive it. Therefore, they're not looking to prove it by perception. What is proposed by shabda cannot be opposed by anuman. For instance, it is said, this medicine destroys the three doshas. So that just has to be taken and accepted. We don't argue it. So when Prabhupada says something, when the Shastra says something, we don't argue that. We maybe discuss how to apply it. We may have to deal with it with people who would themselves oppose it. But this idea that we would accept it because it's shabda. Right? Because we've seen and established and been satisfied that Shastra is correct. Right? And so therefore then you accept that. Shabda is effective in matters that cannot be touched by the power of the senses and mind. An example is the movement of planets. If pratyaksha and anuman are dubious, then the others can be disregarded, since pratyaksha and anuman themselves must follow after shabda for correct knowledge. Right? So if pratyaksha and anuman aren't good, then the other seven forms don't have any meaning. So shabda is the only one. It's the only independent one. So it's, in other words, shabda is there. That's the independent one. Then you see pratyaksha and anuman, then they're unique, but they're dependent upon shabda to actually be always correct. And then the other seven, they basically connected to these three.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And now, if we don't follow that system, it's only confusion.
Yes, there'll only be confusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see people don't get into discussing things so much.
Yes.
Right? Because they don't know how. They're not trained.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so their only position is what they like and what they don't like. That's the only basis of their position.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Generally, if you follow the system and management meetings in any sense,
yeah.
Instead of going to school for
your house. Yeah. No, because you just make it relevant and everything like that. But then the point in that, then there has to be more of a taste in practical accomplishment and gaining of goals. It means gaining of actual, you know, tangible, workable goals. As opposed to just the taste of being in a meeting and saying something and arguing and raising your hand and stomping out and getting grumpy and all that kind of thing and like that. So if the taste is the second, then no one wants it to go smoothly. But the point is like you said, if you have a proper chairperson, then they can make the meeting go really, really quickly. Like that. But for those who have a taste in this bureaucratic kind of meetings, they don't like people that restrict that and make it practical. So in other words, the bureaucrat's practicalness is what you do to give taste to it. That's what's practical. Not what getting things done. Bureaucrats aren't about getting anything done. So they have to have higher authority, you know, impress that. So
now I could actually see in the Vedic approach, first in the sense of topics.
Yes.
That's
why it's all part of the training. But you'll see is that we won't use that. We'll use corporate management. See, corporate, you're going on the thread of profit. So whatever brings out profit, you follow that. So someone who has the karma to make profit, they'll always be able to see that thread of profit and will follow that. And so sometimes it changes in that according to the situation. Right? But that's the one that they follow. You understand? You know, like the kshatriya is what will create an environment to protect the people. So that requires organization, and that organization then has to be based on authority. You know, so like that, and then they hear from the Brahmins. So it's a different approach. So one can fault that thread of, you know, this is what one's supposed to do, this is correct. Does that make sense? Well, then you have the aspect where others, what I mean like this is, it's that, and when we mentioned before, like the politically correct, those who are actually doing something with politics, for them it's just a tool. They use it for their political gain. So they just see, if I speak in one way, if that makes what I'm saying appreciated, but if not, if I speak in the opposite, and then it will make it appreciated, we'll do. Right. So like that. But for many, it's just that they have feelings, and they just follow the path of those feelings. So it doesn't matter what you say or what they say, as long as they can maintain that feeling that they have, then they're satisfied. Even if it's completely illogical, it's not even a proper discussion, it's just an emotional display, it doesn't matter as long as the particular emotion is maintained. You understand? You know, and then you can see, like you were saying before, the academics, the scholars, then it's what gives the intellectual taste. And so they'll follow that path. So that's when you're being mentored, then you're learning this method. They say the academic method. It means the method of non-Vedic mental speculation. Is how to keep that going. Then you can write a 300-page paper that can keep that speculation going the whole time, and intellectuals get a taste from it. Then it's an excellent paper. Does that make sense? But if it comes to a conclusion or that, it ruins it. You know, why would you do that? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, okay.
So you see, like, in circumstances, very difficult circumstances, like Draupadi marrying the Pandavas, all the five Pandavas, then Draupadi was convinced. Because of following the whole structure, what Sridhishya Maharaj speaks, because of his character and his quotes, the Shastra, he was convinced. So then finally, then Vyasadeva comes and then removes even the trace of doubt in his heart. But in modern day, anything, even one part of it, one tenth of such a situation will never be, it goes on for years and years and no conclusion.
Oh, yeah, it's just no conclusion. Okay. I've heard of a case, I'm not sure where it is, but somewhere in North India, that's been actually in the courts and it's still alive for over 950 years or something. The same case. You know, in other words, generation after generation after generation. So, still going on. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of following the pace. So you know, like we were saying yesterday, Lord Ramachandra, what is maryada? What's following the rule? What's the correct thing to do? Like that. You know, or then you see the Brajbasis is what gives pleasure to Krishna. The rag, that attraction, attachment to Krishna, they follow that. So everyone's going to follow some path. It's just, what is the purpose of it? Right, material means it's yourself, you know, or a neutral state. Spiritual means it's about Krishna. Is that the main thing? Yes. The other proofs, methods of gaining knowledge, will be explained in order to gain knowledge of the correct method of proof. Arsha means words of the devatas or sages. Upamana is knowledge based on similarity. A gavya is similar to a cow. Artapati is making a conclusion. Apati, from words and circumstances. Arta, with the form, quote, it cannot be otherwise. Since he is fat and does not eat during the day, he must eat at night. Abhava is not perceiving. Is that you see that one's used a lot. Artapati. Yeah, it means used a lot. It means I see something and, you know, in my view that if they're in that, someone in that situation would be like this or do like this. And so therefore they must be doing like this. But the authority is their own mind, their own perception. So in other words, that's what I would do if I was in that situation. Therefore, it must be that must be the way to look at it. Yes. Yes. Abhava is not perceiving something. If the senses do not contact an object, it is assumed that it does not exist in that place. Sambhava is a probability. Sambhavana, using intelligence. 100 must exist in 1,000. Right, so sambhava is a probability. So that's basically what the modern logic is. Just that. So they're using pratyaksha and that, right? And artapati, you know, there.
Abhava also, the scientists, if they cannot perceive,
it doesn't exist. Aitya is knowledge obtained by tradition from unknown speakers. Cheshta is gesturing to indicate something, such as using the fingers to indicate 10 jars. Moreover, knowledge gained through a method like pratyaksha cannot prove anything spiritual. This is the case of all animals. Their senses will accept or reject based on what is desired or detested. They can never accomplish spiritual perfection. And on the other hand, it is seen that some small children have all knowledge caused by the shabda gained from their parents. Without that, those who have been kept in isolation are dumb and cannot speak. They cannot even act properly. right? Because they're perceiving with the senses. But if they're on their own in isolation, they can't speak. Right? They don't have any particular intelligence, any knowledge in a particular area. They don't have proper behavior. So just on its own, it's not going to produce upliftment in an individual. Right? Without Shabda, you won't know.
Maya is Shabda unique to a human being as it is stated. Because the other things, by seeing the Anuman and then Pratyaksha, even the animals, mostly Pratyaksha, but some animals.
Yeah, mostly that some can use Anuman. Yeah, a few can use. Yeah, they want to teach something. If the animals that they teach something, then it's by seeing the elders do it, then the younger animal then picks it up. You know, somebody does it, and then they all start doing it.
Without Shabda, we are like animals.
Yes, without Shabda, we're like animals. So that's the point that makes us the distinction. This idea that, no, it's modern sophistication makes us human. No, it's just you're sophisticated animals. Some animals are quite sophisticated in, you know, certain areas. You know, like that. How they deal, the gentleness, and the refinement, you know, organization. Like you have one queen termite, and millions of workers, and everything is working fine. Is that...
Human civilization starts by following the Veda.
Sorry?
Human civilization starts by following the Veda.
Yes, that's where it starts. It begins there. Means you can say is okay, when they inquire, that's the beginning of human life. But they actually take it up when they accept the Veda and have faith in it and follow it. But human life is meant for spiritual realization. Therefore, then they must know about spiritual topics. And spiritual topics are only perfect when they're in line with service to Krishna. You know, and that only is perfect when it's done in pure devotion. Priti, it should be noted that in the single verse of Tatvasandarbha, Shiva Goswami has summarily dismissed the scientific method as a means of ascertaining ultimate truth. In our materialistic age, science provides the predominant belief system. We tend to trust that the scientific community, by their collective endeavor, will progressively master nature and bring us enduring and ever-improving happiness. We often assume that truths given us by science are firm and beyond question. Right? In other words, it's a dogma. That's the thing, is the religious things are always up for discussion. But the scientific things, it's just dogma. You're not supposed to... Right? So one may say, how can you just blindly accept the Veda? No, you see and then you're convinced. Like that. No, but it could be. It's not 100%. You haven't read every verse. You haven't seen every... Like that. But at the same time, as they have that full faith in the modern science, in the Pratyaksha. Right? Either they just accept it, or they've kind of been convinced of it, and then they accept it. So that's the difficulty, is that, yeah, it's just, we see if we accept the Vedas, we make tangible spiritual advancement. We use the modern academic method, no one's advancing spiritually.
Faith is like, it's part of the human life, faith in something.
Faith, yes, yes.
And without faith, human cannot live.
No. No. It's just a matter of what? Well, you see, the animals also have some faith, right? You know, and that if you know this thing is there, you know, things will work. They may have be practical about it, but the point is it's only faith in the situations concerning the senses, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Yes.
But humans can have faith beyond that.
Yes.
So then if the faith in science is that it will give you better eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then it's just sophisticated animals. You've only extended the animalistic position. And we often assume that truths given to us by science are firm and beyond question. What science is based on That science is based on empirical factual experience, while religion is based on revelation. Firstly, ordinary people tend to accept the pronouncements of the technocratic elite at face value, without subjecting their conclusions to rigorous, if any, critical analysis. Science has thus adopted a form of testimonial authority, right? So they establish themselves as Shabda.
Yes.
This exposes the enterprise to the dangers of Ipraliksha, the cheating propensity. Because they're not authorities, but then they just say.
Mm.
You know, it's like it was Dhrutakarma Prabhu was pointing out that in the history of archaeology, was archaeology? Anthropology? Anthropology is the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that, they find things, that means they have a certain amount of data and they've come to certain conclusions. But now and again they find data that does not have anything to do with their conclusion. In fact, it proves it wrong. So they just dismiss that data. They'll try to say that there's something wrong with that data. In other words, their conclusion already is the authority, and so any further data that goes in there, then it just refines their theory. But it can't change their theory. Okay. So, yeah, so that's cheating. Vipralipsha. Secondly, placing one's faith in scientists is naive. For the inductive scientific method, like every other human pramana, is prone to error. The ordinary means of acquiring knowledge are especially inadequate for learning about the absolute truth, which is not a measurable thing of this world, and which refuses to reveal itself to speculators and skeptics. Although physical scientists may claim to know the basic laws of nature, these laws, consisting of knowledge of how mechanical forces interact and how we can manipulate them for our own aims, provide only relative truth. Because it's only relative to what we're dealing with. And it's only in lines of how we can manipulate. But just like, let's say, the scientist is doing some work. And that work that he's doing in that area, then he's making some progress. And others are working in a different, you know, same area, but slightly different little line. And they're not making so much progress. So they're making progress. But now let's say, you know, for manipulating the material nature, for getting your aim, right? In other words, science, who's going to apply the science? Because it's not the scientist. Who's going to apply it? Right? It's either business, either the corporate world or the government. Right? So then, now let's say that the area that they're working in is a very useful area, but it won't make money. While this other area, that will make lots of money. So then what's going to happen? That one area of research will be stopped, and, you know, won't be funded, and the other area will be funded. Because they want to use it to manipulate the material energy. Does that make sense? You know, so whatever it is, if they come across it, then it's there. You know, so it's just a matter of what they're going to use it for. So that's the whole point, is that how do you know what to use things for? So, yeah, that's the thing. This understanding of things is not complete. Complete understanding requires that we know not only how to use things, but also what their ultimate causes and purposes are. Though the laws of physics tell us how to measure and predict the physical forces among objects, they say nothing about what or who first brought these forces into being, and why these forces and objects exist. A basic premise of spiritual science is that underlying all existence is a unity, an absolute truth, tattva, that everything thus has defined causes and purposes. Human intelligence that ignores this premise remains poor. We can say, no, but we're doing so many great things. But it's great for us, in our perspective. It's just like, let's say, the parents, they have organized the house. Why have they organized the house? Right? They have some purpose. Right? One is their security of living there, the stability that's there. But let's say they're social people. So then they'll organize the house in such a way that it'll have the advantage of the social aspects. Right? Does that make sense? They can take care of all these things, and depending on how much, you know, the culture is, the sophistication is, then, you know, you'll have the arrangements for the, let's say, the social aspect is developed, you know, so nicely that you want to have, means that social areas the family can use, but it can also be used by guests. But that, now when guests are using it, you don't want that to affect your use. In other words, if in your house you have only one bathroom, that's a problem. Now your use of that bathroom and others' use of that bathroom then is affected. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like if you set up the bathroom the way you like, you have tons of stuff inside that you use. But the problem is that's a difficulty for others going to use it. Because it's not a general bathroom. Does that make sense? So therefore, then they'll have two bathrooms. One that they use and one that is there the guests can use. Does that make sense? You know, that excess. Like you see old houses in India. The front part of the house is for the guests. It's complete in itself. The sitting areas and all these things, the kitchen, even the kitchen, it has entrance from to that side, so you can cook and go and bring things there. But it also has an entrance from the other side. So you can come in from the main house and come into the kitchen and go back out in the main house and not come into the front. Does that make sense? You know, so you have that kind of idea. Now, you have a purpose for your house and what you're doing and why everything's in its place and what it's there for. Something's aesthetic, something's practical, something's this and that. Okay? Now, let's let a whole group of young children loose in that area. Right? Now, for them, they're just going to make things practical. And what is the practical path they follow?
Everything on the ground.
Huh?
Everything on the ground.
Yeah, so it's a matter of they are just going to play. They're just going to have fun. So whatever is fun, that's what they're going to do. So it doesn't matter how valuable the thing is. It only has the value in as much as they can play with it according to their level of nature. They're more gentle, then it's one thing. They're more rough, then, you know, something breaks. It's fun for some of the kids. They laugh, and so they break some more. And if the parents come in and why you're breaking all the nari-taki china, it's like, it's fun. Does that make sense? You know? It makes a nice sound. It goes all over the place. You know? You have the stainless steel plates, you throw them on the floor, nothing happens. They make a funny noise, but... Does that make sense? So, that's the whole thing, is that we're dealing with the material energy that works for us. So it's just like children. But the laws of nature are there, have been established not by us. But we just work with it, and whatever we can get out of it, that's what we do. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. Yes.
Prabhupada gives this Upadeshika kind of story that once he was very bored and he was fed up with everything and he was trying to look for something new, and then meanwhile one of the servants, while he was cleaning something, and then the chandelier fell down.
The chandelier fell down.
Then it feels like special sound, everything clinking and all. He liked it very much. And then he asked to break all the chandeliers so that he could get that effect.
Yes.
Prabhupada says that is how the people in the material world.
In the material world, yeah. They don't know what it's for. They just get some sensual pleasure. Yes. So, yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that they'll think that they're doing okay. It's just like at whatever age you are, you'll think you're okay. The ones below you are dumb, and the ones above you are dumb. Only your age, your people, they really know what's going on. So that's why without Shastra, you don't actually come to the human life. Right? That's why you see Prabhupada says that human form of life. Because it's not human life, it's the human form. So that's the thing. Anyone in the human form of life can take up human life. Okay. Many philosophers, scientists, and theologians assume that scientific evidence, A, can provide epistemological support for, or grounds for believing, a theological proposition.
A and B, these are two, assuming two cases. Scientific evidence,
it means theological proposition is B?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that way.
Same.
I wasn't sure how it was being.
You can say scientific evidence, say A.
Yeah, can be provide epistemological support for or grounds for believing a theological preposition, B, only if the latter B follows from evidence, A, with deductive certainty. In other words, what you see with scientific evidence, if the theological proposition is in line with what you perceived with your scientific method, then it's okay, then it's approved. But if it's not in line with that, then it won't be correct. It's not logical, so it can't be correct. They assume that to succeed in providing epistemic support for God's existence or other propositional commitments of theism, arguments must necessarily take a deductive logical form, like the fire on the mountain example given above. Of course, many arguments for God's existence are framed in precisely such a deductive matter. For example, Nyaya's causal argument. If the premise of such arguments are true and can be known to be true with certainty, then the conclusion follows with certainty as well. In such arguments, logicians say the premise entails the conclusion. Of course, finding premises that can be known to be true with certainty can be very difficult, especially for an empirically based inquiry such as natural science. Many deductive arguments for God's existence fail for exactly this reason. So if you can't prove it by pratyaksha and anuman, then the difficulty comes is therefore the theological things don't hold, aren't considered true. That's just the basics of what they're doing. So that becomes a problem for that when it's just about the senses. Because hard science, if you can't perceive it with the senses, it's not real. So subtle things like the mind, remember it said that the pratyaksha has two forms. As the one is direct sense perception, the other one is what the mind perceives, the subtler forms. So hard sciences are what deals with the sensual perception. And the soft sciences are the ones that deal with the emotional. But they're both based on pratyaksha. So the modern academy, the whole thing's based on pratyaksha. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And then you have, some of the intellectuals sitting in the French cafes, then they'll use anuman. But it's still based off of what they've seen with their senses or their emotions and this and that, and then they'll come up with all those secondary aspects. Abhava, or what was the other one? Arta Pati? Like that.
Sambhava.
Sambhava.
That is a mathematician.
Hmm?
Sambhava is a mathematician,
the
probability.
Okay. For this reason that acharyas like Srila Madhvacharya expend little energy attempting to prove the existence of God by purely logical means. Okay. The existence of God cannot be proved by any inference. For inference of equal force
opposite inference can be achieved?
The existence of God cannot be proved by any inference. For inference, what does that mean? For instance, of equal force can be adduced against
the opposite way.
Huh?
If you're inferring God to something, then opposite way also you can infer against the God.
For inference of equal force. Oh, I said, for inference of equal force can be adduced against the existence of God. Okay. Because you can use an inference to show there's God, but then you can use inference of equal force the other way to prove that there's not.
Yes.
Okay. If it is urged that the world being in effect must have a creator or maker, just as a jug has a potter for its maker, then it may also be urged on the contrary that the world is without any maker, like the self. If it is urged that the self is not in effect, and that therefore the counter-argument does not stand, then it may also be argued that all makers have bodies, and since God has no body, God cannot be the creator. Thus the existence of God can only be proved on the testimony of the scriptures, and they hold that God is different from the individual selves. Vishnu Tattva Vinir Naya.
That's why Madhvacharya, and he was seated in his ashram by his guru, and because he's becoming famous, then a Buddhist logician comes to argue. He first says, by logic you cannot prove anything. Then he quotes like this. He gives a set of arguments for 5 minutes. And the logician, he just gets up and goes, because he has to, his logic has no premise to discuss only. He doesn't even start the discussion.
Okay, yes, he has to.
Exactly how he is.
Yes. Yes. Jiva Goswami shares this dismissive stance towards Anuman, and thus proceeds in the next verse to further elucidate the topics of Shabda Praman. Baladeva Vidyushan. In order to delineate the four topics which have been already indicated, Suchi Tanam, the proof is first delineated. These are the topics. Krishna is the subject, or Vishaya. The sambandha is the relationship between Krishna and the means to express this, the text of this work. The abhideya, defined as, quote, that which should be done, videya, end quote, is worship in the form of hearing, chanting, etc. The prayojana, or purushartha, is prema. Since the work is dedicated solely to describing Krishna, it fulfills the sambandha. Saparyaya means having the same meaning. Samana or saha is combined with paryaya to become saparyaya. Sa is the substitute for saha according to the rule vo pasar janasya, Panini 6382. Saha shabdastu shankalpa yogapadya samridishu sadrishye vidyamane cha sambandhe cha saha smritam. The word saha means doing simultaneously, increase, similarly, having a relationship. From Sridhar Swami. Since the person in the material world is overcome with faults, like Brahma, and cannot touch the highest spiritual object, his sources of knowledge, like sense perception, are faulty. The four faults of the jiva are Brahma, Pramada, Vipralipsa, and Karanapatavya. Karanapatava is the imperfect senses.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. Brahma means thinking something is something else. For instance, one thinks a tree stump to be a person. Pramada is having an inattentive mind. For instance, someone sings close by but does not hear the singing because of thinking of something else. Vipralipsa is the desire to cheat. For example, although knowing the meaning, one does not reveal the meaning to a student. Karana Patava is the limited nature of the senses. For instance, one may concentrate with the mind, but one cannot understand an object as it really is. The faults of the jiva. Time's up. Thank you. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanand.